Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127-games.com.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Wargaming Recon. As always, I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is a podcast that delivers historical and New England gaming to you. If you're a new-time listener to the show, I hope you're going to enjoy today's episode. And for you long-time listeners, you know how the show goes. So we're going to start off with some of the topics that are going to be appearing in today's episode. I'm going to talk about the five reasons to not shop at your friendly local game store. I'm also going to cover a little bit of a new game that's being made. It's called Tabletop Conquest. It's being produced by Brent Newhall, and he's in the early demo stages of it. And then I'm going to close things out with this 20 questions list. I found this on the Fencing Frog blog. I'll have a link to that in the show notes. And speaking of the show notes, you can find those by heading on over to wargamingforums.com/WR78, and that'll help you to get in and see all the stuff that we have on our show notes and get links to everything. Of course, I would love to have feedback from you, so if you hear something in this episode that you would like to get in touch with me about, you can go ahead and leave me a voicemail by calling 347-470-GAME. That's 347-470-4263. And of course, you can send an email to cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com. So I know there's a lot of talk all over the place about why you should go and shop at your friendly local game store. If you're out with any sort of gaming buddies and the topic comes up, there's going to be a fierce debate. I just know it's going to be a big debate. And you're thinking, well, why do I know? I know because I've had this debate. And I've been there before. It's, you know, the popular thing to be like, oh, you know, you got to support the store that's near you. You have to go and support your friendly local game store. I am going to do the five reasons or however many reasons to shop at your friendly local game store. But that's for another episode. I want to start things off in this episode with a little bit of controversy. And that would be the five reasons that you should not shop at your friendly local game store. I'm sure there are more than just these five reasons, but I kind of distilled these five, all the reasons down into these five. So these are in no particular order, by the way. But the first one is that the friendly local game store is not friendly. Maybe the employees there are really rude. The staff fails to acknowledge the customers when they enter the store. There is never an offer of help from anyone. You could be looking and looking and searching the shelves, clearly looking lost. No one comes over and is like, hey, can I help you find what you're looking for? Or, you know, maybe you're in there and you're looking for someone to play a game with, and no one's ever like, oh, can I, you know, what games do you like? Can I maybe find someone here? Anyone here want to play a game of whatever it is that you happen to have brought with you? There's never a recommendation for paint or anything. There's just never any help. Worse than that, maybe the store not only ignores the customers, which I think is really bad, but maybe they ridicule you. Maybe the staff ridicule you. Maybe they make fun of you. Oh, look, here's that fatso kid. Oh, here's so-and-so. We hate when he comes in. He's such a jerk. And maybe they're not ridiculing you to your face, but maybe they do it to other customers. They do it behind your back. And that's even worse. Or perhaps other customers, they are rude or worse to you, and there are never any negative consequences to them. Maybe, you know, someone's always insulting you. Maybe someone, you know, hit you or tried to start a fight or whatever, and the store didn't do anything. They were just like, okay, guys, go at it, whatever. It's completely unacceptable. If the store is not friendly, they're providing bad customer service, and that store does not deserve your business. Number two, the friendly local game store does not stock merchandise that you need. I'm not talking about something that is obscure or a brand new product that's just really hard to get, because I mean, you got to cut the store some slack, right? If there's only one of these things in the world, you can't expect that they're going to have it. So don't be upset if they don't have that, Black Lotus that you wanted for Magic the Gathering, or they don't have an out of print, whatever. But if the product is, you know, it's in manufacturing, it's being produced, It's something that you've seen all over the place. If that store doesn't have it, then that doesn't look well. And, you know, it does not reflect well on them. Regardless of whatever the product is, if that store refuses to special order it, or if they do engage in creating special orders, but they routinely mess them up, that is also unacceptable. If they're going to offer a service, they have to do it well. They have to fight for your business. You do not need to fight for theirs. There are many places where you can go and shop, and they need to realize that they need to woo you. They need to court you. It's like a relationship. If there's a girl or whatever gender that you're attracted to, if there's someone out there who you're attracted to and you want to like hang out with them or whatever, you need to get their attention. You need to entice them. The store needs to entice you, the gamer, you, the customer, to come in and to spend money. They can't just be like, we're here, leave it or take it. You know, that does not work. It's unacceptable. And then if they don't offer special orders, what the heck is wrong with them? Because any store worth its salt knows that it only has so much real estate, so much shelving space, so much floor space to stock products. They can't physically stock everything that's out there. The only way that they can keep pace and the only way that they can satisfy the needs of their various customers is by offering special orders, by saying, do you know what? We don't have the product that you want. It's not something we regularly carry, or we're just out of it. But what we will do is we will special order it so that the next time we are on the phone or email or whatever with iDistributors, we will try to get a copy of it. We can't guarantee that they have it in stock, but we will do our best to do this. And not only will we do this, but we will keep you up to date about it. Whether that means the next time you're in the store, they tell you what's going on, or they send you an email, or they call you, or a letter to your house, or whatever. But they will update you on the status of your special order. Of course, you know, it's also bad if a store claims to carry what you need. Maybe they always happen to expect it on, quote, the next shipment. You know, it's always on the way. It's always in transit. And yet, it's never there. Week after week after week goes by, and they're always saying, oh, yeah, it's on the way. We were told it's being sent out, and it never arrives. That's also unacceptable. And there has to be a certain point where you can just go ahead and say, do you know what? It's not working out. Cancel the special order so that they're not out money, you're not out money, and you move on. The friendly local game store, number three, the friendly local game store is not local. Perhaps the store is really far from you. In order for you to get there, it would take more time than you having dinner, painting an army, and playing in a tournament. Not all stores are close to all the customers, and some take a really long time to reach. I know that there are some places in the world, some places in America, some places in Europe, they just don't have a game store near them. And maybe they used to, but maybe the game store went away, perhaps because of bad customer service, perhaps because they didn't stock stuff or just through no fault of their own, but there's not a game store nearby. And if there's no store near you, it's kind of hard for you to go to a place that doesn't exist. And if it's really far from you, with the cost of gas and the environmental impact of fossil fuels and our carbon emissions and everything, you have to look at your carbon footprint. And if you're going to be spending a long time getting somewhere by car or, you know, by train or whatever, you got to take that into consideration and think, is it worth going? Maybe the store instead, and I know I'm kind of flip-flopping here a little bit, but maybe the store, if it's far from you, maybe they will do an order and then ship it to you. They'll just charge you the shipping and say, okay, do you know what? Pay whatever it is to get the stuff and we'll mail it to you. You just cover the shipping for it and that way it gets to you. So that way you're able to support them. Okay, number four, the friendly local game store does not support the hobby. Perhaps the store refuses to demo games. Maybe it won't host any sort of events. It's impossible to have painting socials because they're as mythical as The Hobbit. Or maybe the store never runs a tournament. There are no game days, no game nights. They might have little to no playing space. Or even worse, maybe they discourage customers from using the playing space they do have. Maybe they have inappropriate terrain. They charge you to use a playing space. And I know that they're in the business of making money. And I know that it costs rent or whatever sort of property taxes for every square foot of space that they have. And if they give space over to playing instead of of space for selling product that, you know, it could be a loss leader for them. But you know what? If customers come in and see other customers, other gamers playing games on space in the store, they are more likely to buy product there. So if a store is discouraging people from playing games in the store, whether it's by charging a fee in order to go and play on the tables, whether it's not having any space, whether it's having inadequate space, that means that they're only shooting themselves in the foot. And it also means they're shooting you, the customer, in the foot, because they're not supporting the hobby that you are going there to buy your products, to talk about. This is a hobby that you're promoting, that you talk about in the community. You're building a community, a tribe of gamers. And if you don't have a place to play, then that means you don't have a need to buy products. And again, the store's just shooting themselves in the foot. If they can't put the effort in to demoing a game to a prospective buyer to say, okay, this is how you play it, and you know, this is what you would need, if they can't provide that help, if they can't host the event so that you can paint what you need to, assemble what you need to, run Friday Night Magic or whatever the case happens to be, if they can't put the effort into it, don't shop there. And then number five, the friendly local game store is not in good condition. It's a wreck. Maybe the store smells really bad, the floors are dirty, the shelves are dusty. You feel like you need to wear a decon suit just to walk through that front door. Maybe it's just really musty and full of mildew. The merchandise has a really thick layer of dust and grime on it. You can put your finger through right across the top of those boxes and you get coated in dust and bacteria or whatever. The store just looks like someone took the most disgusting gamer basement you could ever imagine and then turned it into a game store. And do you know what? I've been in game stores like that. I know they exist and they're awful. If you want to do business, if you want to run a business, you need to treat it like a business. You need to be professional. Too many people go into the realm of the business of being a game store, of owning a game store, thinking, oh, do you know what? This is cool. I'm going to open a game store because I like to play games. I like to paint. I like to hang out with my buddies. And yeah, that's what you get to do if you are a customer, if you're a gamer going to a game store. But if you are the owner of the game store, if you run a game store, you don't get to play games. There's a manager of a game store I love, and he used to go and he used to hang out at the game store before he worked there, and he played games and he saw people playing D&D. He used to have tons of fun just kind of hanging out there, and then he started to work there and he played less and less and less, and then he became the manager. And do you know what? He doesn't get to play games. Even if it's kind of quiet and you're like, hey, do you want to join us for a game of whatever you're playing, a board game, a card game, whatever, he says no. Do you know why? Because he's helping to manage the store. He's running the store. He's placing special orders. He's keeping up to date on inventories. He's doing timesheets, counting money, or, you know, promoting the store and events at the store. He doesn't get to play. That's what happens when you own or run a game store, you manage a game store. You don't get to be the gamer. You have to operate it. You are the operator. You are the business person. And that also means you need to keep the store in good condition. If you expect people to come in, you need to have a clean and tidy store. A store that people can easily navigate. One that is handicap accessible. Wide aisles for people in wheelchairs to go through. And stuff that's easily accessible on the shelves, and playing space that looks nice and it's pretty, and stuff that smells nice. Gamers get a bad rap for having gamer stink, for having this aroma around them that is less than pleasant. And if you know that might be a possibility, invest in aerosol. Get a room freshener. They exist. I assure you, they exist. So if there's just, you know what, all kidding aside, there's no excuse for a store to be in bad condition. It needs to look nice. It needs to be well lit. You need to be able to find what you want to find. So if your friendly local game store fails to meet any of these, or worse, multiple of these, or even worse, all of these five reasons to not shop at your friendly local game store, then maybe you should rethink that, and maybe you should find another friendly local game store that is in fact friendly, that does stock the merchandise you need, that is local, that does support the hobby, and that is in good condition. I know they're out there. I found them. I'm lucky, so lucky, to have more than one of them near me that I can go and shop at. But I also know that not every local game, friendly local game store, not every game store is local. Not every game store is friendly. Not every game store is good. So if the game store near you or multiple game stores near you don't fit into these criteria, then you need to think twice about going there. Maybe you should not go there. Now, in case you think I'm just picking on game stores, because do you know what? I've talked about this before and I've mentioned game stores before. I assure you, I'm not the only one. You go online and you look up like friendly local game stores, and you're going to find articles and stuff from people saying, oh, do you know, I don't think that the game stores are so friendly, or I had a bad whatever at the friendly local game store. I mean, I found one just the other day that an article online, and I can't find it. Here we go, actually. I just found it. I did a quick search for all of you guys. It's on a blog called Back to the Keep. It was posted on March 18th, 2012, entitled Not So Friendly Local Game Stores. And the guy in this article, he went to several different game stores, and he was ignored. People were in his way. He asked people to move, he asked employees to move so he could get a product. He asked for a particular type of paint, a brand of paint that he knew a store used to have, and they're like, oh, it's over there. And when he went over there, it wasn't there. It was a different brand, a different color. It wasn't what he needed. He got bad customer service. He was ignored. It was bad to see this and heartbreaking, because I love going to my friendly local game stores, but not every game store is friendly. Not every game store is good. It's just how it is. So I'm going to have a link to his article on our show notes so that you can go ahead and read Back to the Keep, which is the name of the blog, the article Not So Friendly Local Game Stores. It was written by Robert Morris, and I hope you go ahead and check that out and read the comments, because there's a lot of comments, and it's kind of disheartening to see all the negative experiences people have had at game stores, but it happens. So just keep in mind the 5 reasons to not shop at your friendly local game store. And yes, I promise you, I will do the reasons why you should shop at your friendly local game store, because there's some great reasons to do it. Now I'm going to move on, and I want to talk about a game that I had mentioned called Tabletop Conquest. As I had said, this was created by Mr. Brent Newhall. He's an editor, like myself, over at the Troll in the Corner website, trollitc.com. And he had put this up on his blog. I will, of course, have a link to his blog in our show notes, which you can access by going to wargamingforums.com/WR78, because this is episode 78. But the name of his article on his blog is A Solo D6 Wargame Tabletop Conquest. And you'll be able to get the rules on there. It's a 1-page first draft kind of rule sort of thing on there. But Brent had talked about this on his Google Plus page, where I found it. And I thought, you know what, this is kind of cool. Let me try this out. And what it is that this is a simple game you play with a D6, something to write with and something to write on. So a pen and paper, pencil and paper, and a D6 and the rules. And then you're able to go ahead and just do and play the game. The backstory for the game is that you are the commander of a medieval army. You're attempting to go ahead and conquer a foreign land. In order to do that, you have to make it to the enemy capital and conquer it before you run out of troops. So you get to create your army. You have a total of 200 points to build your army. Your army is built of infantry, archers, and knights. Infantry are 1 point, archers are 2 points, and knights are 4 points. You have a total of 3 units, 1 unit of archers, 1 unit of infantry, 1 unit of knights, and you get to decide how many men are in the unit. If you wanted, you could put all 200 points into infantry and just have 200 infantry. Or, you know, you can divide the math up however you want. I played a game of it myself, and I'm actually looking at what I had done, but I had crossed it out back and forth a little bit. But suffice, I did some knights, I did some archers, and I did very few infantry. Each turn works as such. You move to an adjacent terrain square. You adjust your scores, your army composition really, based on the terrain. Then you roll for the enemy unit to see, enemy army, to see if you have an enemy army to fight, and if so, what is what it is comprised of. Then you fight the army, and then after that, you roll for the square north of you, south of you, east of you, and west of you to see what the terrain is. So you begin the game in one square, and right north of you is a square of water. Water is impassable, and then you would roll a dice for the squares around you, the ones to the south, east, and west. If you get a 2 or a 3, you get a marsh. 4 or 5, you get plains. 6, you get mountains, and 1 is water. Don't forget, water is a square that you can't enter, and then the square that you are currently in, which you roll for at the beginning of the game, cannot be water. So you would roll, and what I had done was I had rolled, and I started off in a square of plains, and I had water north of me. So then I rolled to see what was nearby. So to the east of me was more water, and to the west of me was water. But then the south of me held mountains. So I thought, well, you know, I only have one place to go, so I moved my army south to the mountains. And then I fought a large army. I rolled a 6, and that was not good, because if you roll a 6, that means you're fighting a large army. A 5 is a medium army, 4 is a small army. 3 means you're only fighting bandits, that's 12 infantry. And a 1 or 2 means you are fighting nobody. So I had to fight them, and what you do is you pick one unit type. You pick archers, for example, and then you end up fighting the opponent. So you have to go ahead and you choose which unit you're going to attack. So you roll a d6, and you actually do this before you pick which one of your units you want to fight. So you roll the d6, and depending on the outcome, you're either going to fight infantry, archers, or knights, of course. So you can then look and see what you have that can do the best against it. You multiply your number of troops by a modifier, and that gives you your fighting value, how strong those units are. So you would multiply your archers by 2. So basically, you have one archer, it's worth 2 points. It's worth 2 guys. If you have a knight, you multiply by 4. One knight's worth 4 guys. And then if you have an infantry, infantry's multiplied by 0.5, which means it's half value. So you get 10 infantry, it's really only worth 5 guys. And you do that, and you keep on fighting round and round and round until either you defeat that entire army or it kicks your butt. So I had done that, and I defeated the first army, and I had some casualties, and I moved on and on and on. Now, one thing I should mention is that whatever terrain you're in at that turn that you had just moved into, the one you newly moved into, so I started off in plains, but then I moved into mountains. The different terrain types give you a modifier. They adjust your army composition. Mountains increase the archers by 20%, rounded down. Plains increase infantry by 20%, rounded down. Everything's rounded down in this. And then marshes add 2 knights to your army. So you are hoping to roll a lot of marshes, and you're hoping to give your army to begin with a lot of knights, so that way you just kind of keep on steamrolling. And you keep on doing this, and you keep on moving, fighting, and you know you're rolling for all the terrains around you. And then once you happen to get at least 15 terrain squares, you then roll differently to generate terrain. You would roll water on a 1, that's still impassable, but now 2 or 3 on a d6 equals the capital. A 4 is a marsh, 5 is plains, and 6 is mountains. If you roll the capital and then you move into the capital, you have to fight a 75 point army. Defeat it, and then you won the game. The rules don't state what the composition is of that 75 point army. you could make it just about anything you want. You could make it all infantry. You could be like, 75 infantry, haha, I'll give myself an easy win. Or you could give yourself a really big challenge and go, do you know what? 75 points worth of knights, let's see how that goes. And you put each of those knights in and see what happens. And like it says, as soon as you have defeated that final army in the capital, game's over, you won. And that's how it goes. So I played, and I ended up getting my butt kicked. I had 14 terrain squares, I believe. So one more turn, if I had survived that turn, and then on my next turn, I would have rolled to see about perhaps getting the capital. And then I surely would have died if I went ahead and went into the capital. I just, my army got its ass kicked. I know that someone else was playtesting the game, and they had done really well. They did the math and looked at things and were like, oh, if I give myself knights, that's what I got to do. Knights are going to give me the win, you know? So I just put tons of points in knights. And then they just happened to be rolling really low, so they kept on getting lots of marshes. And as you might recall, marshes give 2 knights. So each time you move into a marsh, you get 2 knights. So this person kept on moving into marshes, getting 2 knights, moving into marshes, getting 2 knights, and so forth. And then they also were fighting really small groups of enemy troops. They were fighting bandits or small armies. They didn't start things off with a large army like I did. They did not have it that difficult. And then it was an easy win for them once they got into the capital. I think the game is pretty interesting. It needs a little bit of proofreading just for spelling and things of that sort. I also noticed that there were a couple times where I was fighting and figuring out my troop strength. And when I was, you know, doing the multiplication, either by 0.5 or by 2 or by 4, that I wasn't getting a whole number and I would have to round. I figured that I should round down always, but the rules didn't say that. I talked to Brent about it, and I was like, Brent, you know, I got a couple questions for you. And this was one of the things I mentioned, and he said, oh, do you know what? You're right. You always round down, even though it doesn't say it in there. That's something you do. You always round down. So that's something to keep in mind. I think this is a good way to play. You could get some games out if you just have some free time by yourself and you want to go ahead and play in, you know, pen and paper. The other thing I thought should be done is it was kind of hard, you know, drawing out the map and then keeping track of my army composition and keeping track of the enemy army compositions because, you know, when you're fighting, you start off by saying, oh, you know, I'm fighting a medium army. And they have 10 infantry and 5 archers and 3 knights. But then maybe you kill all the knights. So then you got to cross that off and be like, oh, they don't have any more knights anymore. And it was hard keeping track of that and drawing out the map. You could just do this all on a piece of paper. And that's what I did. But I think maybe there might be a benefit to having like a tally sheet or something that you just keep track of the army compositions. Or maybe just a blank, I don't know, hex map or something. Or a grid. Like, maybe it should come with some sort of graph paper or something, and you can just use those little squares or whatever. Have something pre-made that's a little easier. Then just be like, okay, I got my notebook, and let me do whatever. Now, it's not bad with a notebook, and you got to keep in mind, this is a first draft, so I know Brent has more to do with it, but they're just my thoughts and some ways that I think the game could be improved. Anyway, you can read more about this by going to the show notes, wargamingforums.com/WR78. We'll have a link to the article on Brent's blog, and then you can, of course, get a copy of the rules and everything there, so you can try it out yourself. I would love to hear what you think about the game and what happens on the first few times that you play it. So please drop me a line at cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com, and don't forget, you can, of course, call me. I love getting phone calls. You can leave me a voicemail by calling 347-470-4263. That's 347-470-GAME. And just leave me a message, and who knows, if you do, you might appear in a future episode of Wargaming Recon. Now, finally, I want to move on to something that I saw on the Fencing Frog blog, which is run by Adam. Adam's a buddy of mine who I've played some games with, and he's a really good guy. And this is 20 questions for wargamers. So it's pretty cool, and I have all 20 questions that I've done, and we'll just get into it. I want to say, though, that I want to hear what your answers are to this. So I'm hoping that you'll take these questions, which will be posted in the show notes. That's right, wargamingforums.com/WR78. So you can find them there, and I'd like to know what your answers are to these. So feel free to, you know, take the questions and then just post your answers as comments to the show notes. Email it to me. Use them on your own blog or social media sites. Put them on Twitter or on Facebook or whatever you happen to use. And send me a link to them because I'd love to see what you have up. So I'm going to start off with question number one. It is favorite wargaming period and why? My favorite wargaming period is the 18th century, in particular, the American Revolution, or for those of you across the pond, the American War of Independence. Since I was a little kid, since I was a small tyke, I really had a big interest in the American Revolution. I just fell in love with all of it, and it stayed with me ever since then. Perhaps living in New England helps because there's just so much history here that's focused on the Revolution. The town I grew up in has the oldest wooden-framed house in America. It was less than an hour drive, just about in any direction, to anything remotely related to the American Rev. You know, you go one way, you end up in Boston, you can go see the USS Constitution, another way takes you to Lexington and Concord, you can go where the location where the Suffolk Resolves were signed, which were basically the preamble to being like, we need to separate from England and do our revolution and stuff. And then, you know, other ways you go and you can see the homes or birthplaces of significant people back then, forefathers. You can go to Paul Revere's house, you can go to the birthplace of John Quincy Adams and the homes of John Adams, President John Adams, and there's just tons of stuff around. It's hard to miss it. There's just so much here, whether it's, you know, old graveyards or just driving down a street and you see a really old house and it's, you know, in the style of the times back then, and you just look at it and it's amazing. You can't go out your front door without tripping over some piece of history from that time period or even earlier. Number two, next period, money no object, Imperial Rome. I can't wait to get my hands on the Hail Caesar rules and lots of beautiful Roman legionary models. With money being no object, I would purchase the most fantastic models, and then I would pay someone to assemble them for me and paint them beautifully. That would leave me free to go ahead and enjoy playing the games and play games as much as possible. I would do it right. I'd get every single model that I ever needed, every variant, every what-if scenario, and just everything. And I'd get really cool 28mm, maybe even different sizes and scales. And, you know, I would do 15 and 6 and 28 and whatever. Money's no option, right? So I could do whatever the heck I wanted. And the key for me would be hiring someone to assemble and paint and come up with some sort of a storage model for them. Get like a professional organizer, I guess, because that covers it, right? Number three, favorite five films. And these are in no particular order, and they're not really historical or wargamery in any kind of shape, way, or form. But, this one would be my number one, but generally no particular order, although my number one would be Star Wars Episode V, The Empire Strikes Back, The Seventh Samurai, The Godfather Part 2, Clerks, as in the movie by Kevin Smith, and Spirited Away by Hayao Miyazaki. I love all five of those. I watch them again and again and again and again. And I know so much of them, forwards and backwards. I feel like I can recite lines from many of them in my sleep. And they've just left an impact on me in so many different ways. Number four, favorite five TV series. I know some of you will laugh at me for a few of these, and that's okay. I'm expecting it. I'm okay with it. I'm embracing my inner geek. So Gilmore Girls, and again, these are in no particular order, but Gilmore Girls, Firefly, The West Wing, Glee, and Keeping Up Appearances. Yes, I figure you guys and ladies are gonna laugh at me for Gilmore Girls and Glee. That's okay. I'm going to accept it. Number five, favorite book and author. That has to be Shogun by James Clavell. I just love his Asian saga. I love Shogun. I love King Rat and Noble House and Taipan. They're all fantastic. And on top of that, because I can't just pick one thing, I'm a huge fan of just about anything by Bernard Cornwell. Red Coat and his Sharp series and his King Arthur series, and he has a Viking series and just so many series. The Starbuck Chronicles. There's just tons of things that he's done that I love. And the Grail Quest series, he's done a lot. I love them all. They're fantastic. Plus, he's a local person. He lives down the Cape. He's a local Massachusetts guy, even though he's really from England, and he just kind of lives there. But I love all of his stuff. He does his homework. He makes it an engaging historical fiction read. And it's a way to kind of just get in and relax, but get something cool going on at the same time. So Bernard Cornwell and anything by him ranks high on my list. Now this next question, I'm sure, is going to provoke a lot of controversy. And it is, what is the greatest general? And you can't count yourself. So that's a tough one. I think there's a lot of good generals that one could pick, and of course, even more bad ones. But I have to pick a fictional general. And maybe it's a cop-out, but it's okay because he's based on a historical general. So I'm picking the fictional general Torinaga, Shogun, from the book Shogun. And he's based on the historical Tokugawa Ieyasu. I'm sure I butchered the name, and Neil Shook is listening, maybe, and thinking, dude, I love samurai, and you just ruined the name. But Tokugawa is the general that Torinaga was based on. Really cool. Read up on the Battle of Sekigahara, and I think you're going to find that it's pretty cool. Something about the Warring States period, the feudal states of Japan, just it's so cool, and the samurai and everything, it's just something to love. And Tokugawa is quite a general. You do a little research. I think you're going to like what you see. Number 7, favorite war game rules. Well, I'm new to wargaming. Not new to gaming, but wargaming. At least historical wargaming anyway. So maybe this is a cop-out, but I played very few war game rules. And right now, I'm loving the Black Powder rule set by the folks at Warlord. Now, I hesitate to call it rules. It's more like guidelines for gentlemanly wargaming, as I call it. It's just a suggestion. You can play it. And if you don't like the rules, you change them to fit what you want them to be. So, rules, I don't know if that's what you want to call them, but Black Powder is what I'm loving right now. Number 8, favorite sport and team. Ice hockey has my heart. And I'm a Boston Bruins fan through and through. I also enjoy football. No, not American football. The real football, what Americans call soccer, but it's football to the rest of the world. I played that for many years as a kid, and I had a lot of fun playing it. I always wished, however, that I had played hockey. It's just too expensive, and really, I wouldn't have wanted to get up for those ice times. But I love hockey. I love watching the Bruins play. I love just hockey in general. I take any amount of time I can to go and watch a hockey game, and it brings me some great joy. Number 9, if you had a one-use-only time machine, when and where would you go? Well, I have two answers for this. One is, you know, sort of an emotional one, and one's kind of like a historical reason. So the historical one I'll go with first, and I'd like to go back to the medieval ages and stop King Henry VIII from separating England from the Roman Catholic Church. I'd like him to realize, do you know what? It's okay to have a daughter and be king, and your daughter could become queen and be awesome, because, I mean, come on, queens rock. So, King Henry VIII, you need to chill and be okay with that, and not just go ahead and divorce and behead all your wives and cheat on them. So, think about that, okay? And the emotional reason, the answer I would give, is that I'd like to go back to the night when I was a really small child, and the night that my godfather had his car accident. It left him a vegetable, and eventually his parents pulled the plug, and he died, he passed. So I would like to go back to then and just convince him to not get in that car, because I wish that I had been able to know him and have memories of him. I don't. And that's something I always wish that I had had. I came across pictures of him. One of my aunts came across pictures of him before the holidays. And it just meant a lot to me. She gave me these pictures and pictures of him holding me and with, you know, the family and everything. And it was really nice to see them because I have no memory of him. But I wish I did. So I would definitely go back to that night and convince him to not get in the car so that he could be safe and he could still be here today. Number 10, last meal on death row. I would like a triple helping of lobster mac and cheese from the main diner. And I would love to have homemade meatballs made by my grandmother. She makes these fantastic meatballs. Nobody makes them like her. I'm sure everyone else feels the same way, that their mother and aunt and uncle, father, whoever, their spouse makes whatever, and it's amazing, and nobody makes it like it. But I assure you, nobody makes meatballs like my Nana. So that's that. Number 11, fantasy relationship and why. So most other people who answered this question have either said, oh, I can't answer it because I'm in a relationship, or they've gone for, like, the person that they'd like to go to bed with. I'm going a different route. I'm picking Ronald Reagan because I would love to be buddies with him. I'd love to be like, so, Ronnie, what's going on? What were you thinking when you were like, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall? I would just love to be buddies with him. And I mean, you know, obvious things are like, oh, JFK or Martin Luther King Jr. or whatever, but I would love to be buddies with Reagan. Reagan is an idol of mine, and I would just love to be like, Ronnie, what's going on? Let's talk. Because, I mean, come on, the Cold War, huge, huge, huge. And just be able to get into his head and talk about what was going on back then. And then, of course, I mean, you have the whole Hollywood aspect of things. When he was an actor, he's a big-time actor, and you could just find out so much stuff about how Hollywood worked, and just old-time Hollywood would be so cool. Number 12, if your life was a movie, who would play you? Now, this is very underwhelming, but that's okay. If my life was a movie, Michael Cera would have to play me because he always plays the socially awkward teenager. And you know what? I was a very socially awkward teenager, and maybe in some ways I still am. So he would have to play me because nobody else plays a socially awkward teenager like he does. And that's just how it is. Number 13, favorite comic book superhero, Spawn. Spawn's an image, quote-unquote superhero, if you want to call a hell Spawn a superhero. Otherwise, I also am a big fan of Iron Man and Captain America. I love the Brubaker series of Captain America. Just a lot of cool stuff going on there. But Spawn has been a longtime hero of mine, favorite superhero, since I was a teenager and he first came out. I mean, I got Spawn number 0 and number 1, and I remember those early storylines. And I just really enjoy them. Some great stuff there. So Spawn, definitely it. Of course, Iron Man and Captain America. Notice no DC people there. Anyway, number 14, favorite military quote. I kind of have two. One's by Julius Caesar. I know it's used all the time. Veni, vidi, vici. And the other one is by Field Marshal Rommel. I would rather he have given me another division. That was something he's quoted as having said when Adolf Hitler made him a field marshal. And really, you got to think about that. You know, Rommel had a lot of adversity, and he did some amazing stuff. And if he had more troops and more supplies and everything, I don't know. I think Northern Africa, might have been different for a while. Number 15, historical destination to visit, Gettysburg. I've just always wanted to go to Gettysburg, never been there. I'd love to go see the battlefield and just kind of walk it and everything. I've been to Yorktown and some other places, and I loved it. But I've never been to Gettysburg. One of these days, I hope to get there. Number 16, biggest wargaming regret. So this is probably, no, not probably. This is pretty lame. My biggest wargaming regret is that I've never spent enough time to fully learn the rules of any game that I'm playing. I always forget them eventually. And, you know, when I would be playing 40K or Warhammer Fantasy, whatever, I would never remember what I needed to hit, what I needed to penetrate or whatever. I never remembered any of these things, what my save was or whatever. And even in something as laid back as Black Powder, I'm always forgetting, oh, how many inches are we getting to move per, you know, move order? And what do I need to roll to hit or to... I never remember any of that. My head just doesn't do it. And I like to think that if I spent enough time trying to memorize that I could, but I don't know, maybe not. So that's a lame, but my biggest wargaming regret. Now, my favorite fantasy job is number 17. I would love to be a professional podcaster. I'd love to be able to work out of the house and podcast, put food on the table, podcast, and pay the bills, pay a mortgage. I'd love to be able to talk about games and just be a geek and chat with guests and publish content and do all of that as a podcast and be able to say, do you know what? I'm filing my taxes and look at that. I am a podcaster. And that's not to say I don't like the job I have. I do like it. It's interesting. But it's not my dream job. My dream job is to be a podcaster. It's been that way for a while, and hopefully someday it will be, and maybe, just maybe, if more people like you are listening to episodes like this, maybe someday I'll be able to be that podcaster as a real full-time fantasy job. Number 18 is favorite song top 5. So my top 5 favorite songs, I can't really give you because I don't know what they are. That's just so difficult, but what I can give you is my top 5 favorite artists. That's a lot easier for me to do. So they are in no order, although this first one's probably more of my number one than anyone. But Dave Matthews Band, Nirvana, Green Day, Alanis Morissette, and Franz Ferdinand. Those would be my top 5 favorite artists, top 5 favorite musicians. Number 19, we're almost at the end, I promise you. Number 19, my favorite wargaming moment. That has to be the first time I attended Huzzah in Maine. It was really just magical for me to go to my first Wargaming Con and playing games that were so amazing. People who ran the games were a lot of fun. The games were a lot of fun to play with. The models were amazing to look at. Terrain was fantastic. I just had such a great time. And then it was completely foreign to me to be able to play a game and drink beer at the same time. The con is sponsored by a brewery. How much better can you get? A close second would be going to Battleground Games and Hobbies in Abington for my first time. That's the place that my going to that has resulted in many of my friends. So that holds a special place in my heart too, and for different reasons. Number 20, the miserable git question. What upsets you? Well, I guess the easy couple would be what doesn't? No, I'm kidding. I really hate, as far as gaming goes, I hate rules lawyers. I just can't stand them. Yeah, the rule might not say this, or it might be unclear, or maybe it says you can do that, you may do that. It doesn't mean you should do that. You gotta be a good sport, and I think rules lawyers, power gamers, are not good sports, usually. I hate to say it, and that's also one of the reasons why I don't like to play in tournaments, because the purpose of a tournament is to win. Purpose for gaming, for me, is to have fun. They're not the same thing for me. And maybe for some people, the winning is the way they have fun. And you know what? That's fine. But that's not what I like. So that's why I get to start off this question with rules lawyers. I also get upset by people who don't help others. I think you should help your fellow man or woman or whatever. I hate a mess. If there's a mess around, places in disorder, it bugs me. And I can't operate. Like, I think of the mess and I gotta go and I have to clean it. It's a little weird, but I just can't live in an area that's all messy and whatever. It needs to be nice and orderly. You know, there's a place for everything and everything needs to be in its place. So a mess upsets me. I also hate and I'm upset by unfinished business. Let's just get stuff finished. If you're working on a project, finish it, okay? Don't leave it halfway through. Just get it done. I'm upset by slow drivers. I'm also upset by humidity. And I'm very upset by communism and death. I know, that's a strange mixed bag for the things that upset me. But that's number 20, my answers, from the top 20, not top 20, but 20 questions, wargaming questions. So I will have this on the show notes. I will remind you yet again, I know I've been reminding you a lot, but I will remind you yet again, that you can find the show notes for this episode by going to wargamingforums.com/WR78. And if you go there, you'll be able to find the 5 reasons to not shop at your friendly local game store. You'll be able to find a link and information on the article, Not So Friendly Local Game Stores, on the Back to the Keep blog. You'll be able to find Brent Newhall's solo war game, Tabletop Conquest, with a link to his blog as well, where you can also download the rules, and you'll find the top 20, not top 20, I keep on wanting to say top 20, this has been a top whatever episode. But the 20 wargaming questions, you'll be able to find my answers on the blog. You'll be able to find a link to Adam's blog, Fencing Frog, where he had his up. I hope to hear back from you guys. I'd love to see what your 20 questions are and the answers are. I'd love to see what you think about my 5 reasons to not shop at your friendly local game store. I'd love to find out what you think about Brent's game, Tabletop Conquest. So how can you get in touch with me? And I know I put this in the credits and everything, and you'll hear that at the end. But the best way to get in touch with me would be to send me an email. Send an email to cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com or leave me a voicemail. Call 347-470-4263. That's 347-470-GAME. I'm also on Twitter. It's CWFGamecast, @CWFGamecast. On Facebook, just look for Wargaming Recon over on Facebook. We have a whole page there. Lots of people have been liking us, and you can leave comments there. Of course, you can leave a comment on the blog. It's wargamingforums.com. Or best place to leave it would be by going to the show notes, wargamingforums.com/WR78. And you can leave them there. So I look forward to hearing from you. And I hope that you enjoyed this episode. Things are drawing to a close, so I'm going to fade on out and cue the credits and all the stuff about the Troll in the Corner podcast network. We are a proud member, so you'll be able to hear promos and find out a little bit more about some of the other shows on the network. And then, of course, we'll be back again in 2 weeks' time with another episode of Wargaming Recon. I want to thank all of you for listening. I hope you've had a good time listening, and I look forward to coming to you again and speaking to you again in the future. So, as always, this is Jonathan J. Reinhardt signing out, and keep on gaming! This show is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. If you enjoy this show, you might like some of the other podcasts on the network. Every Wednesday is a new episode of Indie Talks with Troll ITC owner Ben Gerber. Ben chats with people involved with indie games, movies, and much more. Every Thursday is a new episode of Geeks Explicitly, hosted by yours truly. All aspects of geek life are discussed. Wargaming Recon comes to you on the 2nd and 4th Mondays of the month. I chat about historical and New England gaming. Monsters of the Shattered World, hosted by Troll ITC editor Brent Newhall, releases monthly. This story podcast details the adventures of a young scholar encountering strange monsters on a foreign planet. To learn more about the shows on TCPN, visit www.trollitc.com/TCPN.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner network at trollitc.com. and give Indie Talks a listen.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Geeks Explicitly. New episodes coming at you every Thursday with Drew and Jonathan talking about geek life. If you don't listen to Geeks Explicitly, then only at trollitc.com.